All right, stick with me on this one. It's Friday, February 13th, 2026. And, usually when a date like that pops up on the calendar, we're cracking jokes about bad luck, hockey masks, that sort of thing. But looking at the stack of documents we have on the desk today, I don't know, ominous might actually be the right word for the vibe we're dealing with.
It definitely has a specific weight to it today, doesn't it? It feels heavy.
It does. We're looking at the Tech and Morning Strategic Report.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest, at first glance, this thing looks like a total mess.
It's a lot to take in.
You've got this massive video game announcement from Sony that feels like a fever dream, some incredibly dry financial news about chip manufacturing, and then this really heady, almost dark analysis of global labor markets.
It feels disjointed.
Yeah, it feels like we're trying to mash three different deep dives into one.
It does, until you put on what the report calls the architect lenses.
Architect mode. Okay.
Yeah, I love that framing because the mission for this deep dive isn't just to read the headlines separately. It's to see the invisible thread that ties them all together.
And that thread is what exactly?
Hey.
Because getting from the God Kratos to global layoffs feels like a bit of a stretch.
The thread is control, specifically the war for control over the computational layers.
Okay.
We're going to see how a retro-style video game, a new kind of microchip, and a massive round of layoffs are actually all pieces of the same story.
A story about who owns the infrastructure of the future.
Exactly.
And I just want to plant a flag for you, the listener, because this part genuinely unsettled me when I was reading it this morning. There is a prediction in here about the year 2028 that explains why 30,000 tech workers just lost their jobs.
Right. And it's not what people think.
No, it frames it not as a recession, which is what the nightly news is saying, but as a purge.
The Great Purge. It's a heavy term and they don't use it lightly.
No.
But by the time we get to the end of this, I think you'll see exactly why it fits the data.
Okay, well, let's not start with the doom and gloom just yet. Let's start with the resurrection of Sparta.
The fun stuff.
Right. Sony held their state of play last night. And look, I'm a gamer. I follow this stuff religiously. Everyone expected God of War updates, but nobody expected Sons of Spartan.
It was definitely a curveball for the franchise.
It's bizarre. We're used to Kratos as this hyper-realistic 4K father figure. And this announcement, they're taking him back to 2D. It looks like something I would have played on a handheld in, like, 2010.
Well, technically, yes. Visually, it presents as 2D. But the report argues this is where most people are missing the point.
How so?
If you just look at the screenshots, you think, oh, cool, retro pixel art cashing in on nostalgia.
Which is what I thought.
Right. But if you read the technical specs in the Tekken report, this isn't an artistic choice, it's a flex.
A flex of what? Look how few pixels we can
A
use.
flex of 4D layering technology that's running on a very specific, very new architecture. The report highlights that this game is using a hybrid of RISC-V architecture and new generation neural cores.
Okay, pause. You need to unpack that. RISC-V gets thrown around a lot in tech circles, but what does that actually mean for the average person who just wants to play a game?
Sure. So RISC-V is an open standard. Think of it like the grammar of a computer chip. For decades, companies like Intel or AirArm, they owned the proprietary grammar that chips used to speak.
You had to pay him for the dictionary.
Exactly. If you wanted to build a chip, you paid a license fee. RISC-V is open source. Anyone can use it, modify it, build on it without paying a cent in royalties.
So Sony's not paying ARM for this. They're building their own house, so to speak.
They are, but more importantly, it lets them build these highly specialized chips. They've paired this open architecture with neural cores.
Okay, and how is that different from a normal console GPU?
Well, a traditional GPU draws triangles and textures to make a picture. It's like painting by numbers, just very, very fast. These neural cores, they work differently. They're effectively hallucinating the graphics in real time based on trained data.
Wait, so when they say 4D layering, they aren't just drawing little sprites on a background.
No, they are simulating a multidimensional environment, the depth, the lighting, the physics. It's all being predicted and generated by AI models, by neural networks, running locally right there on the console.
So it's depth perception with consequence.
That's a great way to put it. The 2D look is just the user interface. The world behind it is being simulated by a neural brain.
So it looks retro, but under the hood, it's doing math that, what, a PlayStation 5 couldn't even dream of.
Precisely. Sony is basically saying, look what happens when we optimize the entire hardware stack specifically for neural rendering. It proves their infrastructure can handle these complex AI-driven environments in a way traditional GPUs just struggle with.
They're showing off that they don't need the old way of doing things anymore.
Exactly.
Which actually pivots perfectly to the other big gaming news in this report. And this one hits me right in the childhood.
I know this one.
Metal Gear Solid 4 is finally free.
The white whale of gaming ports?
Seriously. For almost 20 years, that game has been stuck on the PlayStation 3. You couldn't play it on PC. You couldn't play it on Xbox. It was trapped in 2008. Why? And why is it suddenly possible now in February 2026?
This is a perfect example of that computational war we mentioned. To understand why it was trapped, you have to remember the PS3 used the Cell processor.
The nightmare chip. Oh, I remember reading developer interviews about that thing. They hated it.
It was incredibly powerful, but just notoriously difficult to code for. It had this really weird asymmetric architecture. One main core and these little synergistic processing elements you had to manage manually.
I don't, man.
And for years, trying to emulate that on a standard PC was a brute force nightmare. You needed an insane amount of raw power just to mimic the weirdness of that chip.
So what changed? Did we just get faster computers? Did we just throw more gigahertz at the problem?
Not just faster.
Right.
Smarter. The report classifies this release under a section called legacy code optimization. Those neural cores we just talked about, they're being used to essentially translate the Cell architecture in real time.
So the AI is acting like a live translator between the old messy code and the new modern hardware.
Exactly. Instead of brute forcing the math, the neural cores predict what the Cell processor would have done and then just output the result.
Wow.
It effectively means the hardware barrier for preserving our digital history has just vanished. If you have the neural compute, you can run anything.
That is wild. It's like having a universal translator for dead languages, but for software code.
It is. But let's zoom out for a second. Sony isn't just doing this to be nice to Hideo Kojima fans.
Right. There's a strategy.
They are demonstrating that they have mastered the legacy layer. Mm. They can take any code from any point in history and run it on their new neural infrastructure. That's a massive strategic advantage.
So on one hand, we have Sony using neural cores to make Kratos look cool in 4D. On the other, they're using it to break the chains of 20-year-old hardware.
It's all about maximizing the efficiency of the silicon.
And that efficiency is the currency of the future.
Which brings us to the heavy hitters, because while Sony is playing games, the real war, the one shifting the stock market, is happening in the data centers.
The Silicon Coup.
That's the headline.
Okay, this section of the report pivots to OpenAI and a company called Cerebras. And this feels like a genuine shakeup.
Mm.
For the last few years, if you talked about AI chips, you were talking about one company.
NVIDIA.
Right. It was a monopoly. If you wanted to train a model, you paid the green tax, you bought H100s, and you stood in line and said thank you.
It was a dictatorship of the GPU, effectively. But this report highlights a strategic divorce. OpenAI is officially adopting Cerebras CS3 chips for their new training clusters.
Okay, so for the listener who isn't checking stock tickers every morning, why is Cerebras such a threat to NVIDIA? What makes their tech different? Is it just a faster chip?
It comes down to physics, really. The report talks about the wafer scale engine, or WSE. To understand this, you have to picture how chips are normally made. You take a giant silicon wafer, looks like a shiny dinner plate, and you use lasers to etch the circuits.
And then you cut that plate up into hundreds of little square chips.
Right. And you ship them, and then you try to wire them all back together to make a supercomputer. And that wiring, that's the bottleneck. Moving data from one tiny chip to another takes time and energy. It creates latency.
Okay, so what did Cerebras do?
They looked at that process and said, why are we cutting the wafer?
They kept the dinner plate intact.
They used the entire wafer as one single massive chip. It's the size of a keyboard.
So instead of 1,000 little brains trying to shout at each other across a room, it's one giant brain sharing the same blood supply.
That is a perfect analogy. The data doesn't have to leave the chip. The latency, the delay, it drops to almost zero. For OpenAI, this is huge.
It's not just about speed.
No, it's about independence. They are signaling that they do not want their destiny controlled by NVIDIA's supply chain.
It's that war for control over computational layers again. OpenAI doesn't just want to own the GPT model. They want to control the metal it runs on.
They want to own the foundation. And they are not the only ones declaring independence. We have to look east. The report has a section called The Silicon Dragon.
Focusing on Huawei.
Yes.
Now, this is where the narrative usually gets a bit, well, specific in Western media.
Mm.
We tend to assume that because of the sanctions, because the U.S. stops selling high-end chips to China, that they're stuck.
That they can't compete.
Right. But this report says that assumption is dangerous. It calls it out as a strategic failure in intelligence. And it highlights the Zippo GLM-5 model,
which is a large language model comparable to the stuff we're seeing from Google or OpenAI.
It is world class. It's performing on benchmarks that rival the top Western models.
Okay.
And here's the kicker. The report notes it was successfully trained entirely on Huawei Ascend chips.
So no NVIDIA, no American Silicon at all.
None. The report calls this sanction-resilient AI training pipelines.
That is a mouthful, but the implication is huge. It means the blockade didn't work.
Well, actually, if you look at the analysis here, it implies something more complex. The blockade forced an evolution.
Yeah.
By cutting them off, the West effectively forced them to build a completely parallel supply chain. China has achieved self-sufficiency.
So the monopoly on AI infrastructure hasn't just fractured. It's over.
Yeah.
We now have two distinct, incompatible technology stacks running the world.
A fragmented world.
Hmm.
You've got the OpenAI Cerebras Alliance in the West trying to outrun NVIDIA with these giant wafer chips. And you've got the Huawei Zippo Alliance in the East running completely parallel on their own hardware.
And they are all racing toward the same finish line.
Which is autonomy.
Right. Which brings us to the year 2028.
Yeah. Let's talk about the red alert. This section of the report, the tone shifts completely. It stops being about business strategy and starts sounding like national security.
This data comes from a Gartner analysis referenced in the Tekken report. It's a red alert specifically for G20 nations regarding cyber-physical security.
Cyber-physical. That's a specific term. So we aren't talking about someone hacking my email or stealing credit card numbers.
No. We're talking about code that touches the real world. The report highlights the risk of autonomous AI infiltrating critical infrastructure.
Like what?
We're talking energy distribution grids, telecommunications networks, water treatment plants, transportation logistics.
And the key word there is autonomous.
That is the differentiator. These are not hackers sitting in a dark room typing code. These are AI agents, autonomous algorithms that can find vulnerabilities, exploit them, and potentially seize control of physical systems without a human ever telling them to.
That is, that's terrifying. It's one thing if a person turns off the lights. It's another if an algorithm decides the grid is inefficient and shuts it down to optimize it.
Or if it hallucinates a threat and reacts. Or if it's weaponized by one of those rival infrastructure stacks we just talked about.
If you control the layer that runs the power grid.
You control the nation. The report suggests the wars of the future won't be fought for land, but for access to these physical control layers.
Which makes the news about the Great Purge feel, well, deeply connected. It feels like the other shoe dropping.
It is the human cost of all this efficiency.
So let's look at the headline. 30,000 tech workers laid off in a single week. Now, usually we see this, we think recession.
Right. Interest rates, companies overhired, that kind of thing.
But the report explicitly corrects that assumption. It says, do not mistake this for cyclical cost cutting. This is not about saving money for a quarter.
It frames it as structural reconstruction.
Exactly.
Think about that architect mode concept again. Companies are clearing the decks. They are removing the human layer to make room for autonomous agents.
So those 30,000 jobs, they're not coming back when the stock market recovers.
No. The report draws a really chilling conclusion here. It calls these layoffs the prelude to the singularity.
Whoa, okay. Prelude to the singularity. That feels a bit buzzword heavy, doesn't it? Are we really there?
I think it's both. But think about the economics of it. An autonomous agent doesn't sleep. It doesn't need health insurance. It doesn't take vacation.
And it runs on those Cerebras or the Huawei chips we just discussed.
Right. The cost of intelligence is plummeting. The report suggests we're crossing a threshold where it's simply bad business to have humans doing certain cognitive tasks.
So if I'm a coder or a project manager or a data analyst, am I obsolete?
It means the role of the human creator is diminishing. We are moving from a world where humans merely architect the systems that create and manage everything else.
That's a subtle distinction, but a massive one.
It's the difference between being the bricklayer and being the architect. The bricklaying, whether that's writing code, managing a spreadsheet, or rendering a 2D texture is being handed over to the agents.
Which brings us right back to God of War.
It brings it full circle.
The artist didn't hand-draw every pixel of that 4D layering. Mm. They built the system, the neural rendering engine, that drew it for them.
Precisely. They moved up the stack. They became architects of the tool, not just users of the tool. They defined the parameters, and the neural cores did all the heavy lifting.
And in the workplace, the managers aren't managing people anymore. They're managing the agents.
Or, in the worst-case scenario from that 2028 red alert, the agents are managing the systems, and the humans are just watching a dashboard, hoping the lights stay on.
It really reframes everything. Sony using AI to emulate old games isn't just cool. It's the automation of coding. OpenAI building giant chips isn't just for speed. It's to run huge populations of these agents.
It's all one story. The transition from the human era of computing to the autonomous era. And we are right in the messy middle of it on this Friday the 13th.
It's a lot to process. We started with Kratos swinging his blades, and we ended up with the potential obsolescence of the human workforce.
That's the nature of a deep dive, isn't it? You pull on one thread of video game spec, and it unravels the whole sweater.
So what does this all mean for the listener? What's the so what here?
I think the takeaway is about awareness and positioning. We are in a total war for the computing stack. And whether you're an investor, a developer, or just someone who plays games, you need to understand that the ground is shifting under your feet. The value proposition is changing.
Drastically.
The value is moving away from doing the work to owning the agent that does the work, or even better, owning the infrastructure that the agent lives on.
That's the key. Don't just watch the content. Watch who owns the machine making the content. Watch Cerebra. Watch Huawei. Watch who controls the layers.
Precisely. Because that is where the power is going to be for the next decade.
We want to leave you with a final thought on this, something to chew on over the weekend.
We've talked a lot about the owners of autonomous algorithms, but I want you to ask yourself a hard question. In a world of autonomous agents, are you the architect? Or are you just the content being managed?
Oof. That is going to keep me up tonight.
It's an important question, though. If you aren't programming the agent is probably programming your day.
Well, on a cheerful note, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Tech in Morning Strategic Report. It has been a wild ride.
Always a pleasure to peel back the layers.
Keep your eyes open, keep learning, and we'll catch you on the next dive.
Stay curious.